Hello, everyone. Welcome to Minds on Mushrooms, where we're unveiling the magic behind psychedelics for mental health and addiction. I'm your host, Maggie Kirkwood, and joining me today, we have James Eshelman coming from Denver, Colorado. Hi, James.
Hey, Maggie. Good to be here. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for joining. I'm so excited to talk to you, considering all of your expertise. James is a transformational coach, a psychedelic guide. We have all sorts to talk about today. Can't wait to get into it.
Yes.
I was thinking, could you kind of start us off just with a little bit of background about yourself and how was it exactly, you know, tell us about how you are here today in this space helping people.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, a lot of the work that I do in my life right now is a manifestation that's been, you know, decades in the making in a lot of ways. My disposition as a kid, I was always very curious and contemplative and connected to my emotions. And I have had experiences even in youth where I could kind of feel like the significance of what it is to be alive. I have some vivid memories when I was younger. And I think, you know, along the way in my journey, with that disposition and with that nature, I followed kind of the traditional path and got into business and finance, and that's what I studied in college. And I think, you know, my nature and the traditional sort of path that I had chosen were in a lot of ways at odds with each other. I dealt with a lot of depression, anxiety, suicidal ideation, even alcohol, or relationship with alcohol, and substance use. And so, you know, in my mid-20s was when I really stumbled upon plant medicine and the ceremonial arts and using plant medicine for achieving higher, you know, levels of consciousness and healing of the mental, physical, spiritual, physical, emotional, emotional bodies. And it was in those spaces where I started to discover that, you know, my nature as a kid was, you know, starting to make sense, why I felt all the things that I felt and why I experienced all the things that I felt. And so about a year and a half or two years into my own journey with plant medicines and healing my own, you know, working on my own healing, the co-facilitator asked me to, or the lead facilitator asked me to step in as a co-facilitator. And I started working with him to serve medicine to other people. And that's when I really began to connect to what I was here to do in the world. And so it was this beautiful flowering of my profession and career and life's purpose.
I see. And you have your own, I guess, business, the Center of All Directions, where you offer guided journeys, correct? And I'd like to talk a little bit about that. Well, let's first talk about, so in Colorado, is the use of psychedelics or psilocybin, it's legal, correct? Is that a medical model that it's legal for, or is it, can you talk to us kind of where the law stands? I'm curious with psilocybin.
Yeah. So the law that was passed in November 22 is a kind of a two-part bill, or ballot measure, actually. And on one hand, you had the statewide decriminalization of plant medicines. So that includes psilocybin. Mm-hmm. And decriminalization is a term that effectively deprioritizes the possession of these substances. So personal use is allowed. It's like tantamount to saying like the police have to, you know, prosecute a jaywalker before they could prosecute somebody with possession of psilocybin mushrooms. So it's not totally legal per se, but it's like, you know, they can't commit any resources to it. And then the other side of it is it created a regulated access model. And the regulated access model is to say that the state will begin licensing facilitators and facilities in 2025 to offer regulated access to work with psilocybin. So what we're seeing here at this time in Colorado is the regulatory body is putting together all the rules and regulations for how that industry is going to operate. And people are planning healing centers where these medicines will be offered legally under state law.
Wow.
So that's the way it works right now.
Gotcha. And I'd like to just kind of touch on, let's say, for example, a group ceremony. Do you offer those? And I'd like to hear more just about your personal experience acting as a guide, kind of as it relates to a group setting, and how, you know, I'd like to just kind of walk through a ceremony if you're open to that, kind of just the whole ceremonial piece and ritual to get kind of a ceremony up and going. What does that look like?
Yeah, so I mean, I would say a lion's share of my work right now is really one-to-one, but I am beginning to offer group journeys.
Sure.
And so group journeys are, I think, in a lot of ways, sort of the best way to utilize these medicines, because they're medicines that are meant to be communal. Right now, you know, kind of in our world, everything is very individualistic. You go and see a therapist and you sit one-on-one in therapy. You might have a coach, you sit one-on-one with your coach. And then community healing is pretty limited in terms of availability. Community healing might be men's groups, women's groups, you know, different organizations that facilitate conversations and in group processing. And so what I see with group ceremony is it's an opportunity for people to break down the silos of their individualism and begin to heal in community. And it's kind of like, I liken it to like a sack of potatoes, you know, like we're all little potatoes in a sack. And as the sack, you know, kind of rolls around, all the potatoes rub against each other and clean each other off, right? Rub the dirt off of each other. And I think that's what group ceremonies offer is that there's often, you know, a measure of friction is, you know, get a bunch of personalities in a room, and not necessarily bad friction. I think it's creative friction, and that you get to sort of see how you relate as an individual within a space of other people. So, and then on top of that, you know, you put 10 people in a room who are doing deep work on psychedelics, and there's a way in which, you know, it can kind of feel like you're in it together and you're healing not just yourself, but you're healing kind of the room, the collective, by working on the things that you are working on. And so the beauty and ritual is such a big part of ceremony. Ritual can be very simple. It could be the way that, you know, you're invited to walk in the door, or the way that you're, you know, kind of held in a space, or the way that you, you know, approach the medicine space. And then there's practices as well that are, you know, real qualifiers of ritual. Might be fire ceremonies or intention setting circles, or even using sage or different aromatic you know, like space cleaners, you know, to like
sure,
to clear
yeah.
space. Mm-hmm. And so each one of those, I think, is, you know, what ritual is intended to do is invite in the sacred. And really the sacred is just, you know, the deep relationship with self, with life, you know, be qualified as love, even to invoke deeper experience rather than sort of a superficial or recreational experience. So, it's an invitation to do deep work. So, and then the group journey is, as everybody's kind of laying around doing their own work, the level of consciousness within the collective group raises, and it just makes more energy available to each individual to process and work through whatever it is that they came to work through. And then there's the beauty of group integration afterwards too, where everybody can share about their experience and you start to see the commonality and the threads of, our connection and our lived experience. And you get to see that, we're all, working on our own individual thing, but it's very much, a lot of the things that we're working on as people are a part of what other people are working on. And then you realize that you get to learn from each other and gain insight and wisdom from each other. And it's a really beautiful thing.
It's so true. I like to say, at the basic level, with microdosing, for example, I think that people are all kind of realizing just kind of the basic effects. I feel, more connectedness, presence, clarity, just kind of like a mood enhancer, right? And then I think, at least with my journey, when I started to feel more comfortable and take larger doses, it was sort of like, I always like to say, kind of like peeling back the layers of myself, or an onion, I guess, to decide to go deeper and kind of deal with some heavier or, unresolved trauma. I'm wondering, when people come to your space and, they're new, or this might be their first larger dose experience, how is it that you work with them to decide on dosing and, making sure that they're, I feel with this podcast, there's been a ton of questions around dosing. And I think off screen, I was telling you, I get annoyed between, we've got micro and macro. And it seems like those are, there's two options when I really feel like it's this full spectrum. I guess I'm a little bit more curious about, if somebody says, James, I'm ready, I'd like to, have you as a guide. I'm looking to go deep. Obviously I'm sure there's some intake and understanding about what I'm trying to accomplish and receive from the medicine. Can you talk a little bit more about, how you decide, dosing per individual?
Yeah. So one of the big considerations when somebody comes to me is, what is their intention, right? Or their objective in working with these medicines. And the intention will shape oftentimes how I think about dosage. So, if people are coming to me, and two, probably also an important consideration is the amount of experience that they have with these medicines. So,
sure.
Like for instance, I'm currently working with a young lady who has an eating disorder, and she doesn't have experience with psychedelics. I mean, she's worked with ketamine, but not psilocybin. Mm-hmm. And so what we decided to do is give her, a smaller dose. So she was somewhere in the neighborhood of like 1 to 1.5 grams of psilocybin in her first journey. Mm-hmm. And then we'll do a second journey here upcoming where she'll do 3 grams. And I kind of see it as, like you said, there's definitely a spectrum of available experiences. Once I have found that once, you get above a certain point in dosage, you kind of have a diminishing return, if you will, on therapeutic potential. So, introductory doses are anywhere from 1 to 2 grams. And those are doses that will invoke some kind of a mystical experience, but not a full ego death or a partial ego death. And then you get up into the realm of about 3 grams, and that will kind of put you on the edge of the either partial or full ego death. And those are really valuable therapeutically. I know death has a kind of a negative connotation, but it's actually quite therapeutic to break apart the sense of self and create a new sense of self that's more apropos to who you are. So the dosage, it's just kind of I feel out the readiness of the individual. I feel out their intention and what they're seeking. And then I kind of apply an appropriate dosage to what they're trying to accomplish.
Great. I love that. I like to say start low and slow, right? let's talk about ego death a little bit more. I think that for some people, it's a common term and, people know about it, but I'd like to hear just a little bit from your specialty, can you kind of explain ego death and how it would relate to someone looking to learn more exactly about, what that entails and how it feels and I guess the benefits for going through an experience like that?
Yeah. Well, I think, life kind of teaches us how to be in the world, and we teach ourselves how to be in the world. And so we build these sort of identity structures, sense of self, this ego, that is meant to help us survive, and it's often a double-edged sword where it helps us survive, but it can also keep us from, embracing a wider perspective or view of ourselves. And so one of the most virtuous things of an ego death is it dissolves the places where we might be limiting ourselves, limiting who we are, limiting our perspective, limiting our identities, limiting our energy as individuals. And so an ego death, is a dissolution of the structures or identities that are maybe antiquated, right? They're not full in their capacity to embrace who we are in this moment. And so, psychedelics are, they're really designed and meant, and maybe not designed, but that's what they induce is the dissolution of identity structures. And it's not to say that they ever, like, these identity structures might disappear, but we'll always create a new one. Like, we live in human bodies. We live in a physical body. The only time we ever experience a full and complete ego death is at the end of life. It's essentially a software update. That's an easy way to think about it, is it's a software update that makes us more efficient and more effective at processing the data of our experience. And it can be uncomfortable at times because these identity structures do provide a sense of safety, but they also, in trying to keep us safe, can limit us as well. So the discomfort comes from realizing that we need to let go of something, an identity that has kept us safe, and the fear of what is on the other side of an ego death.
Thank you so much for that. I wanted to get back to, you mentioned you were currently working with someone who's struggling with an eating disorder. I wanted to ask your perspective on how the medicine can help with an eating disorder. Is it because with the medication and ego death, like, are people working on self-love, which in turn helps with body image? Or what are your views with using psilocybin for, I actually am learning weight management because I see both sides of the spectrum where psilocybin has helped with weight loss. And I want to hear from you more about the eating disorder side, because it is something that I'm getting asked about, and I'd like to hear your thoughts there.
Yeah, I think there's many layers to look at this. How these substances help with eating disorders, coping mechanisms, addictions, what have you. Mm-hmm. On one level, it's certainly a self-love, partially a self-love thing. What I see with eating disorders and these detrimental, self-detrimental coping mechanisms is that there's typically some measure of like a self-image issue or self-esteem issue, the absence of self-love. And I think psilocybin is good at helping to bring about a better understanding of what self-love is, which can then create less attachment to addictions of any kind, because they start to lose their power. You know, these coping mechanisms start to lose their power as you begin to feel, you know, a greater sense of self-esteem and self-love. And then on top of that is, you know, the way that psilocybin works is it can restructure the brain, create and induce states of neuroplasticity, which is to say that the brain becomes more optimal at learning about its environment, learning about the body, the brain-body connection, learning about the stimulus in its environment and how that stimulus is affecting the body's need to protect itself. And so as the brain becomes more creative, it can find more appropriate solutions to manage the stress of the environment that it's in, which I think coping mechanisms are often, ways in which our bodies and our minds learn to cope with our environment. So, and then two is, Gabor Mate is one of my favorite authors, and his work is very inspiring. And he essentially says that all addiction is an outcome of disconnection. Disconnection from self, disconnection from other, disconnection from community, from nature. And these medicines work to dissolve the walls that we build around ourselves to allow us to connect more fully with the world around us. So so in doing so, I think the outcome of that is that the attachment to these coping mechanisms becomes less fierce and more relaxed. And then people, of course, always have to tend to their behavior and the things that they do in order to change, the way that they engage themselves with life.
Great. I was curious. I know you had told me that you had yourself had, you've had some ayahuasca ceremonies for you.
Correct.
Do you offer ayahuasca yourself to others?
No, I don't.
No worries. I was just curious. I'm also curious. Can you talk to me? I'd like to just hear more about your ayahuasca journey, or if there's anything. I think a lot of people question, where to start with plant medicine. And if you have any insight on what it was that made you decide you were ready for an ayahuasca journey, had you kind of dabbled with psilocybin beforehand? I'd just like to hear more about you and your experience there.
Yeah, so my first experience, I guess the seed of my curiosity with ayahuasca was planted back in 2010, 2011, when a documentary called DMT, The Spirit Molecule, came out. And it talked about non-ordinary states of consciousness, and it talked about connection with God, and that word holds a lot of weight or whatever for various different people. But to me at that particular point in time, it felt like exciting. So I told myself at that time that if I ever had the opportunity to sit with ayahuasca, that I would do it. And shortly after I moved to Denver, I had an opportunity to sit with it. And I kind of took my time and waited for the right time to go and sit with it. And I think, these medicines by and large, especially ayahuasca, will kind of call. There's a calling on the other side. And it certainly called me to it. And that was my first experience with psychedelics.
Ayahuasca,
which I don't recommend. Not to say it's bad, but it's an intense experience, and it's, I think it's a really valuable thing to get comfortable with altered states of consciousness with medicines that are a little less potent than these stronger psychedelics. Like take for instance psilocybin. It's it's a pretty, you know, popular, widespread recreational substance, and microdosing is a great way to experience it. And it has an incredible safety profile. It's relatively safe compared to most of these other psychedelics, and really, honestly, relatively safe compared to any other substance that you can find out there to try to have a good time. And that it has a really positive therapeutic potential. Even through recreational experiences, you can have therapeutic experiences with recreational dosing in the right setting. So, you know, when people are considering what, you know, to experience for, you know, their first psychedelic or any psychedelic for that matter, I would say, listen deeply to the call. Is this something that you're doing because you want to have an experience that's cool and novel right now? Or is there a deeper, more sacred calling to the medicine and to the work, you know, meaning, is there something that you're looking to grow through and get out of an experience with the medicine?
Yes, I think, that's a great response. I do hear all the time about the calling, especially with Aya or ayahuasca. I was talking with a girlfriend who had her first journey recently, and it was this realization that the medicine was kind of like working before, during, and after. After her experience, she was just explaining that she did indeed feel called and felt as though it was, as soon as she had committed to taking that journey, that it was working with and for her. That's just amazing to me. I wanted to talk about kind of more of the integration that you offer your clients. What does that look like? So if someone were to come to you, you know, talking about what they're hoping to accomplish, and then you sit with them and they receive the medicine, is an integration happening there as well as after their journey? How do you do that?
Yeah. Well, I think a big part of integration is the preparation as well. So to be able, you know, I view integration as meaning making. How do you make sense of a mystical experience? It's very challenging to do without any background information on somebody. So having a sense of who they were before the journey, before the experience, is really valuable. I work with people in the preparation to get a sense of their psychological, emotional, and spiritual disposition. Meaning, what traumas do they have? What was their upbringing like? What was their relationship with their parents like? What things have they experienced in their life that were difficult or mile markers along the way that really helped to form the personality that is sitting in front of me? Within that, we begin to dance with what an intention is for the journey and really look to create definition and clarity around what is this person wanting to get out of this experience. And so by doing the preparation in that way, you create kind of a container of that's sort of sacred. It's to say, like, this is something that really matters to me. It's really important to me. That's going to help me live a more full and complete and loving life. And that's just such a beautiful thing. So then that's the thing that, you know, people bring into the intention of the journey. And that I think really helps with, you know, safety in the experience. It helps with depth of healing that can occur in and through the experience. And then it also helps with integration. So, you know, as somebody goes into a mystical experience and they have big realizations, or, you know, they maybe see themselves in a brand new light, or they have, you know, a lot of insight into their past, making meaning of that by beginning to tell a new, more expansive and complete story of their life, is what integration is about. It's about making whole, you know, bringing in the parts of you that have been sort of lost along the way. And it's, I think, a really cathartic process too, to begin to see the ways that, you know, the story that we tell ourselves actually was limiting our experience, right? And then the big question in integration is, okay, how do I apply this now? You know, how do I apply this to my day-to-day life? And And it's a multi-part question, because I think a lot of it will just sort of unfold naturally, you know, mm-hmm. on a deeper level. But then there's, you know, the observation, just by merely observing your experience, how you're responding to your environment, how your environment's responding to you, whatever environment that is, can tell you a lot about what that journey meant for you. And mm-hmm. not only that, but who you are on the deeper level. And then building practices around supporting that version of you. So maybe it's lifestyle decisions, maybe it's self-talk, you know, maybe it is habits, journaling, meditating, going on nature walks, building new community, you know, creating a support system that's capable of holding, you know, the full expression of who you are. All of those things are really important.
Yeah, I'm a huge believer in journaling. I never used to be. And for me, it kind of goes hand in hand with the medicine, especially with a microdosing protocol. I think it's, you know, for the most part, sub-perceptual. So it's kind of just taking the time to check in with yourself. Even if it's a weekly thing, I feel that some of the small changes are happening kind of like behind the scenes. And it's not until I'm revisiting my journal or, you know, kind of taking a look a few weeks, months back to realizing, wow, I have had a certain mindset change or a different perspective on a scenario that I was dealing with. So my journals have been really invaluable for me and my journey. And I kind of love that. It was just something, you know, I kind of stumbled on the medicine haphazardly. So I love talking with people like yourself, just to, it changes, or, you know, just constantly learning. It's just a journey of learning all the time. I wanted to check in and talk about some of the specific offerings that you offer with the Center of All Directions. Did you want to talk about, you've got a men's group, I see. I think we touched on your coaching and guiding. Can you talk more about your men's group? Is that something new that is coming, or have you launched that?
I haven't launched the men's group just yet, but it's forthcoming. And I've done a lot of men's group work in the past.
Okay.
So I've been facilitating men's groups for the last 4 years.
Wow.
And I've worked with somewhere in the neighborhood of 100, 150 men in those men's groups containers. And I work with a lot of themes and thematics in masculinity, whether it's anger and rage, vulnerability and emotional availability, or it is purpose and meaning and embodiment work, and also, you know, intimacy as well.
Okay.
And so, yeah, we address a lot of these themes in sort of a council format, you know, sitting around and talking about our lives and creating a sense of brotherhood where we can get, you know, accountability, advice, reflections, curiosity, and then practices. So we'll do anger and rage practices to express, you know, the anger and rage that most men hold in their bodies and keep contained, and bring it out in a safe way rather than out in the world in an unsafe way.
Mm-hmm.
That energy of anger and rage actually holds a lot of vitality and life force energy. And so when men are able to harness that, it can lead to some really powerful and potent changes in their lives. And then vulnerability is, you know, men, it's hard for men to be vulnerable. It's hard. This is a culture of masculinity, and it's been this way for hundreds, if not thousands of years. Yeah. And so beginning to untangle all of the stories of what vulnerability is, untangle the story of, you know, how vulnerability is weakness. Vulnerability is actually strength, and it takes a lot of courage to be vulnerable. And how to be vulnerable too, without sort of breaking down, you know, and losing your structure and falling apart. which is also, it's an incredible skill, and it's something that's needed in this world and needed in relationships. So those are the primary facets. And I think everything that I do, from the psychedelic guiding to the transformational coaching, the men's work, is all built around introducing sort of these ancient technologies back into modern application. So, you know, each one of these kind of items or services, if you will, is built upon helping steward people from one way of being into another way of being, which in the past, in ancient history, was done in community and done with elders in a structure of community that was really supportive, which is greatly lacking in our world.
Yeah.
And so I strive to you know, help people experience a new way of relating to themselves and to the world around them through each one of these offerings.
Wonderful. Have you ever worked with any couples, I'm curious, that have come maybe with some relationship issues and maybe wondering if psilocybin or ceremony might help resolve some of their marital things or coupled issues?
Yeah, I've worked with quite a few couples.
Oh, wow.
It's powerful. within my psychedelic guiding work, I'll lead, you know, couples through their own preparation and integration process, and then we'll do the journey together. And it's really healing and connective to see, you know, like the resentment fall away, and and the anger and the pain, and see the deeper vulnerability of the other person. I mean, even just choosing to step into this work together as a couple says a lot about how much they care about each other. And then through the journey and the experience itself, you know, you really get to see, I really get to see the depth of love that people have for each other, where it's like, you know, they maybe at times they're like our two children with their backs to each other, just waiting for the other person to come around to the other side and apologize or connect or whatever. And so this medicine has a way of just like turning people around and, you know, enabling them to face each other.
I often think about if, with my journey, if psilocybin would have entered earlier, just because I know on a personal level, with my failed marriage, there was so much resentment and, you know, rather than turning inward, I would turn to wine and just mask away and hide away and escape away. And, I think for many couples, post-pandemic, pre-pandemic, I mean, that's just the easier route or, you know, easy way to go. So I have been getting questions around essentially couples therapy using plant medicine, and I might have some people to send your way.
I love that. I love working with couples.
That's so exciting. I love it. Yeah, me too. And let's see here. So we've covered, you offer psilocybin. Do you work with any other plant medicines, in any of your ceremonies? Is this pretty much just the mushrooms?
Yeah, just the mushrooms. And I mean, nature is one of my greatest teachers. And so I do some ceremonial work up in the mountains here in Colorado as well. Wow. So, but as far as hallucinogenic plant medicine, psilocybin is my, is the one that I work with.
And I just wanted to kind of hone in when we talk about people having a mystical experience. Can you kind of just give some verbiage about what your version of that might look like? I think there are a lot of questions. I know for me, my first mystical experience was completely, you know, profound and noticeable that I was having one. But I think that's a lot with starting to, you know, look into the medicine. It is kind of, you know, what exactly is that? What is it? How do you define mystical experience, if you don't mind?
My first mystical experience was at 6 years old on my couch. And I could, I remember having, it was right after my grandfather had passed away, and I could just feel what eternity felt like, which is
okay.
Such a strange thing for a 6 year old to be feeling.
Yeah.
And, but it was this connection to something that's much larger than myself. And I think by and large, that's what a mystical experience is. It's something that connects you, you know, to something much bigger than yourself, like a full embodied, you know, invitation and invocation of something bigger. Call it God, source, the divine, the universe, what have you.
I see.
And psychedelics are just very, very good at creating or inducing these mystical experiences where you begin to connect to, these different facets, God, source, divine, and or the universe. And it's expansive. You know, it sort of moves you outside of your own limited human experience and into something that it can be confronting, but can also be beautiful in the perspective that it offers. So I think to paint this as, you know, a mystical experience is something that's available in any container is really important, because it's not just about psychedelics, but psychedelics just happen to be very good at it.
Okay. So mystical experiences can happen and do not necessarily have to be medicine induced. Correct. Just maybe for me. No, I appreciate that. I think that with my journey and mystical experiences, it's definitely made me more open to realizing the powers of the universe, and that just more connected. I had kind of shut that off completely until very recently, you know, just a couple years ago when I started my journey. And that in itself is so magical to me, because I was just, living in my own misery and choosing kind of to be there, although it was difficult to get out of. But I think that one, you know, just one thread of light is just feeling more open to possibilities and connecting on that larger level. So it's real good to hear reinforcement from you. All right, well, we've covered so much, and I love the idea of posing it to the listeners, of possibly having you back and maybe kind of doing this live format where if people have the courage to submit some more individual questions, or, you know, people have so many questions on this topic. And I think that you are amazing. And I think that we might have some interest, just like I said, live format. And if you're open to it, kind of serving up some answers. Does that sound good to you, maybe in the future?
I would love that. I think, you know, there's a lot of curiosity about this work and this space and what psychedelics, the potential that psychedelics hold. And I'd love to, you know, engage with your listeners in that way. That feels very enlivening for me.
Awesome. Well, let's plan for that. And yeah, I just keep saying it's a never ending conversation. So that's why I have a podcast. And, you know, even in the short time I've had it, there's so many directions to go. And again, so many questions. And I'm all about educating and harm reduction. And I just really appreciate your time and you being here. And we're going to put up your website. I believe it's centerofalldirections.com, correct?
Correct.
Yeah, I'll have a link to it with the episode. But I want to say thank you so much, James. It's been a pleasure. You've been wonderful. And I'll be in touch to think about that live format podcast.
Lovely. Sounds great, Maggie. Appreciate the conversation. Thank you.
All righty. Thanks so much. Have a good one.
You too.
Bye, James.
Bye.
For more information, please visit mindsonmushrooms.com. Thank you for joining the journey.